darlings, I'm Charlize, the founder of online storytelling platform Girls Will Be Boys, and this is Say It With Your Chest, a podcast which aims to shine light on the corners of important conversations which are so often missed out of the media or seen as taboo. This Girls Will Be Boys podcast offers you an opportunity to enter different people's worlds, share unfiltered conversations, and encourage our guests to say it with their chest.
Became part of my personality, like the hair girl. Oh, Gina does hair, Gina does this. When I started to lose my hair, that was when it became like I had a really bad identity crisis, because like, who am I without afro hair, without that? Black women's hair especially is so political. Mm-hmm. It's so nuanced and it's so important to the individual and us as a collective. One of the worst feelings that I've ever felt is sitting in the shower and having my hair fall out in clumps in my hands, because it's just so... I thought I was dying at one point because I didn't know why it was happening.
Welcome back to Say It With Your Chest. Today I have the amazing Gina. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Gina. I am a wig designer and advocate for hair loss, especially in Black women. So that's me. And I'm a mummy.
Yes, and you are a mummy.
I just have to add that in there.
It is a full-time job.
It really is.
And your pronouns?
She, her.
Amazing. So today's topic of conversation is how shame is often used as a weapon of manipulation. And I wanted to talk to you about it with regards to Black hair. So do you want to tell everyone your hair journey?
Yes, I do. It's a long one, but I will start at the very beginning. So I was raised in London. I was in foster care from 11 months old. My birth mother is Nigerian, and I was brought over in like a private foster care situation. Mm-hmm. It was very like, well, it was something that was done a lot in the like 60s, 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. And I was born in 83. So I was brought over, and my foster parents, who I was left with, were a white family. And we always kind of struggled with my hair. And it was just like the main bone of contention. My mom, my foster mom, who I just call my mom, just really didn't have any clue how to do my hair, like, whatsoever. And it was like she did try, but it just wasn't happening. She would use like really strange things in my hair, and then she'd get frustrated and just shave it off. She would just cut it off. So, oh, the kids back in Nigeria look great with their short hair, so you can, yeah, so you can have it like that.
Wait, love what her age were you when she first shaved your hair?
Maybe about 2 or 3. She just used to constantly do it.
Wow.
Until I was about 8 years old, when I said, I just don't cut my hair anymore. I'll do it myself. Don't cut my hair anymore. Mm. And to her, like, thankfully, she listened. She's like, oh, I won't cut your hair then. Mm. And I decided to just learn how to do my own hair. I had some neighbors, one was from Trinidad, one was from Barbados, and they used to like plait my hair, and they used to like put extensions and braids and all this stuff. And I used to sort of like feel them doing it. And that's how I learned. So I learned by feeling, which was fun. And it sort of like became a way of me to identify with my Blackness, with my culture. Mm-hmm. Because being Nigerian and being Black, but living in Southwest London properly, like with a white family who were like, not just white, they're white.
Yeah.
Like very white.
I know what you mean.
And I love, and I they treat me very well, love them dearly, but they were very white. And it was just such a hard sort of place for me to negotiate being me and sort of finding out who I was, as especially as a teenager going into my like teen years, trying to figure out like make friendships. I was like in South London, and it was like there was lots and lots and lots of other Black children. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't really connect with them.
Yeah.
But I found that through hair I was able to do that, because we all have the same type of hair, we all have the same type of struggles, and that was sort of like the only way I could, you know, connect with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing hair from the age of like 10, I was plaiting people's hair, plaiting my friend's hair, plaiting adults' hair, making my little pocket money, making my little £20.
Come on.
I was rich too. I was very bougie back then with my £20 going to buy my Write On magazine. I was like, hi. I was doing hair and just learning how to be around people who look like me. Mm-hmm. Without feeling like an outsider. And mm-hmm. it was my one way. I've always kept that way about me. Like hair has always been something that I always use to start a conversation. I always use it to connect with anybody. So regardless of race, nowadays I just will talk about hair and it becomes kind of like, it became part of my personality, like the hair girl. Oh, Gina does hair, Gina does this. And over time, when I got into my late 20s, when I started to lose my hair, that was when it became like I had a really bad identity crisis. Because like, who am I without this, without afro hair, without that sort of vibe that is who I am?
Yeah.
And it felt like really very strange that when I didn't have that, I sort of lost a huge part of myself. Mm. And I always find that it feels very shallow when I say it now. Like, didn't you have anything else about you, girl? Like, really? Like, how comes it's just about your hair? But Black women's hair especially is so political. Mm-hmm. It's so nuanced and it's so important to the individual and us as a collective. Mm-hmm. So it can just feel like, just all or nothing. It can be so important.
Yeah.
So when I started to lose my hair after I had my first child and I was misdiagnosed. They said, it was just your hair loss is due to postpartum shedding. That happens. That's perfectly normal.
They love to misdiagnose Black women.
This is it, you know. And as soon as I went into the doctors, they judged me straight away, like a racial profiled me straight away. Like, oh, it's your hair practice. It's this, it's that. Not knowing that since 2008, I had been talking about natural hair and caring for my hair. Mm. Like, it's not my hair practices.
Oh, so they were assuming it was extensions.
Stop braiding your hair, stop putting in weaves. Never had a weave, didn't put in braids. So it was like, instead of asking those very few questions, it became like I had to do my own research and mm-hmm. I had to learn for myself, which is really not okay, especially in this day and age, because it could have been something that wasn't alopecia, it could have been something else. And here I am trying to research it. When you Google certain things, like Dr. Google is not our friend, you know, you can be Googling stuff and you put in such innocent words like backache and they'll tell you have syphilis. So
trust and believe.
It's very stressful to try and diagnose yourself with these things. The doctors are there for a reason.
Right.
And I get that they're general practitioners, but they also need to have some kind of training or guided essence or something just to ensure that they're doing their job and helping people, because that's what they're there for. It's like, if you go into this role, you were there to help your community as a whole, regardless of who they are. So I felt really let down by that. And with my hair loss, I felt very, when we're talking about shame, I felt very ashamed because of my hair loss. I skipped over it, but from 2008, I started a natural hair blog where I was talking about natural hair and beauty and just going back to basics with everything from my diet, from my hair products that I put on my body, things that I put in my body. It was 2008, so everyone had a blog and it was mm-hmm. like the renaissance of that sort of way of communicating. And I became quite a big thing in that industry. So it was very discouraging when I'm telling people to like look after your hair and don't do this and don't do that, and then my hair's falling out in clumps and I don't know why. And I had a lot of like, there was a lot of shame put on me because of that. And it's always like when a white person loses their hair, from what I've discovered within the alopecia community, is when white women lose their hair, it's almost like they get a lot more sympathy for it and mm-hmm. there's not a lot of blame is placed on them for their hair loss. Mm-hmm. With Black women, it's literally like, it can't just be a form of alopecia.
Yeah.
It has to be something that you've done. Mm-hmm. It has to be, you know, it's your hair practices. Or the worst one that I've ever got was like, oh, you know, well, Black women's hair can't grow. So it's like, why do you care? Like, you look cute with short hair. Da-da-da-da. It's like, yeah, I know I look cute with short hair, but
but that's not
also,
the point.
it's falling out on its own accord. That's mm-hmm. not normal, and it's not something that I can, you know, I feel like I didn't get to have that sort of empathy mm-hmm. from people mm-hmm. where I see that empathy towards other demographics.
Yeah.
So it became quite an interesting sort of thing to notice, I guess.
Within the community itself.
Yeah, within the community as a whole, like just within like the world, I think that is seen as Black women, we're seen as strong, and as, you know, if you have a shaved head or if you have low hair, it's like a fierce kind of empowered thing. Yeah. And it's like, it's not always to do with that. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you have to wear that armor, regardless of whether that armor fits you.
Right.
You know, it's
given to you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, so I've shaved my hair off and now I have to like be fierce and happy about it. And mm-hmm. there was times in the beginning when I first shaved off my hair completely. It was in 2018. And
that's quite recent.
Yeah, girl.
Oh.
I was hiding for a very long time under my wigs, as I do now, because, you know, this ain't mine, girl. So, yeah, in 2018, after I had my second child, was when I decided to shave my hair. Because of what happened with my first child, I knew that it was probably going to happen again. Mm. So I didn't want that hair loss situation. That's one of the worst feelings that I've ever felt, is sitting in the shower and having my hair fall out in clumps in my hands, because it's just so... I thought I was dying at one point because I didn't know why it was happening. I genuinely thought, like, this is not just normal shedding and, you know, the things that you read about and all the hair blogs. This is handfuls and handfuls of hair. And I just felt like there's something seriously wrong with me. Like, what is going on? And no one seemed to, again, with empathy, no one seemed to really care.
Mm.
So I was sort of like suffering in silence, like my hair's falling out. And I didn't want to go through that situation again or have those feelings again. Even though I knew what my hair loss was by then, I still had that feeling of, you know, that I was gonna have that feeling of loss and of despair again. So I was like, no, preempting it, kind of nipping it in the bud, shaving it off on my own terms.
Mm-hmm.
But even when doing that, I still really felt not confident with walking around without any hair, because hair had become such a huge part of my personality.
Mm.
And by then I was like rocking my fro not much shorter than this, and it was like, to then go to nothing was like, wow,
it feels like a loss.
It does.
Yeah.
And I was like showing my hair online but wasn't going out of the house.
Right.
So to leave the house, I was like, I wouldn't take off my wig.
Right.
Whereas now I would just take off my wig and be like, cool, whatever, I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
But back then it was very much like, I just felt very self-conscious and not even about what people would say, because people look at me and still, they wouldn't really say anything. It's all internal. It's all about how you feel and how perceptions of society have sort of impact you without them having to be said.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a really strange sort of thing, because I thought that shaving off my hair, I decided to do it, I wanted to do it, that I would be confident and be able to just strut outside my house straight away and be like, yes, I'm bold. Empowered. And loving it. And I'm like, not loving it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on it.
Yeah, I don't love it. I had to become really like okay with my face and okay with my personality, because the first thing people talk about when they meet me is, oh, I love your hair. Look how lovely your hair is.
Right.
And it's like, I struggle with like social anxiety. So when someone, I find it hard to spark up conversations anyway. So having that sort of talking point, those are my talking points for the last, 15 years. It's like, okay, so I'm going to a party or I'm going to this event, so I need to smile and be happy. And then when someone talks to you, like talk about something that you know and that you're passionate about. So I would talk about hair, and it's like, oh, I don't have that anymore. So what am I supposed to do? I had to like discover who I actually was, but outside of being the hair girl. And I discovered that I like being the hair girl. Like, otherwise, now all I talk about is my kids. It's very, I was like, oh no, oh, I'm boring. That's it, I'm boring.
No, like, I think like when you place, I don't know, it's like you said, I always say to people as well, when they ask me like, well, what does it feel like to shave your head? Or when they ask me why, why would you tell me to shave my head? Like, what would I get out of it? And I'm always like, well, aside from like learning your head shape and like having to get used to your features and playing around with how you dress and stuff, you do discover things about yourself you didn't know you needed to know. And that's only through not having hair. And it could be good, it could be bad, but I still feel like it's important things that you learn about yourself when you don't have your hair.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the important things I've learned is that, you know, it's cliche, but we aren't our hair. Mm-hmm. We are multifaceted people. Mm. And I think so much, like I said in the beginning, so much is put onto Black women's hair, especially whether it be negative or positive. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of positivity towards my hair. But again, I also had a lot of, you know, like Black people's hair doesn't grow, Black people's hair is this, Black people's hair is that. Such the microaggressions, the macroaggressions, the aggressions.
Oh, right.
It's like having to constantly go through that just about our hair, what naturally grows out of our head. The fact that I started a blog because I decided to not relax my hair anymore talks volumes about how much we put on the issue of hair as a community.
Mm.
Because even now, I think everything goes in cycles. And even now I see a return to like relaxers and different things like that. And it's almost like we've been here before and it just sort of regurgitates and sort of repeats itself.
Mm.
And they'll be back again. We'll have another movement and everyone will be returning to natural again and all this stuff.
Mm.
But I just think it's almost like I want to get to a point where we can just be,
right,
regardless,
right,
as opposed to constantly having to explain or lean into a certain stereotype, mm-hmm, just because of how you wear your hair.
Mm.
And it's, and that can be said for people who have fro, people who have relaxer, people who have no hair. It's almost like you have to fit into the box of why do you look like that? Like, why
always
does my
question.
Why does my visual, how I look, have to be so important? I get it, it can be impactful, but why does it have to have so much importance of who I am and who you,
right,
think I am?
Because, right,
you don't really matter. So why am I caring here? Mm. Like,
No, it's true. It's like, which way do you turn as a Black woman? Because if you relax your hair, it's because you're feeding into the Eurocentric beauty standards. If you have your natural hair, then it's nappy. If you have weave, again, it's the beauty standards. If you shave it off, it's because you don't know how to look after your hair, or it's because you can't be bothered to. So it's like, what are we supposed to do? I feel like now, because there was so much shame in relaxing your hair or having weave, it's come back around because people are like, you know what, I'm going to reclaim this. Like, you're not going to put shame on me. I'm going to do it because I want to. But like you say, it's like, but can we just be?
Yeah.
Can we just be?
That's
we shouldn't have to
I think
explain
it has to
it.
Always, there always has to be some kind of, I hate to repeat myself, but political stance. It can never just be because I like it.
Right.
It always has to have some sort of other nuance to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, sometimes it's not, that's not the case.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I feel like my hair fell out and because I am reasonably in the public eye, it's like I have to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like, what if I choose not to?
Yeah.
I'm happy to talk about it because I feel like it helps people. And as much as throughout my whole narrative, I guess, of having natural hair, growing my hair, trying to sort of reclaim that space and, you know, look after myself and whatnot, I knew that by doing it and sharing it, I was helping people.
Right.
And I think that's always been something that I've been quite drawn to. I like to help people. I like to service my community. I think because I missed out on so much growing up in regards to being around other Black women and, you know, being within a culture that was Black, I find that I gravitate towards sort of servicing my community and,
right,
you know, trying to help others. So I will talk about it, but it's almost like, it shouldn't have to be the case. I shouldn't have to talk about it. Like at the moment online, I'm like, I've been wearing a lot of wigs. Like wearing wigs today. It's cold. I've been wearing a lot of wigs. But I almost feel like I look at my page and I'm like, oh, I haven't had a bald moment. Like I need to put something out there that's not, you know, wiggy. I need to like, oh my God, people will think I'm hiding or people will think I'm this. And it's like,
you know, what's so weird? Like, I have that thing, but mine's is like the flip side. So for example, you know how you said that you still struggle sometimes with like, or you struggled up until recently with having a shaved head and feeling like proud, and you didn't have that first like moment as soon as you shaved your head. Me, like I was like, right, that's it, there's no going back. But like, I love wigs, but I can't leave the house in a wig because I feel like my shaved head has become my identity. And what if I go out and like someone sees me, and because of the ideas that other people put on us, I'm like, I don't want them to think that that's the kind of person I am, when actually like I've got a shaved head and that is me, and I always want to present myself with a shaved head. So I've struggled with like my relationship with wigs because I think they're so fun and I love wigs, but there's so much identity attachment to having a shaved head, which is obviously the opposite to what a lot of people say they have that with the hair.
Yeah, no, I can really understand that, because I can, like, the whole summer I was not wearing a wig. And when I put it back on for the first couple of times, I was like, it's a lot, isn't it? There's right. just, it's enough. It's like, oh my God, so like, enough. And my partner doesn't really like wigs. And it's like, oh, so I'm constantly sort of in this, in a turmoil of like, oh, I love wigs, and also I make them, so I would like to, you know, sell my wares, please. but also it does take getting used to being in that kind of like space. But again, it just goes back to the fact that it's more that it's never going to just be hair. Like, I posted something the other day about, you know, people say it's just hair, but it's never ever going to be just hair, especially for Black women. And I think that there can be good things from that, because a lot of our industries, a lot of our creativity comes through hair. I think even from we used to hide rice in our hair. We used to do all these things
right.
to communicate and to liberate ourselves through hair. And I think that's really important. And I think it is a part of us. So there's something in that where I wouldn't want it not to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like got us in a chokehold as well.
Right.
So I feel like I want to be proud and, you know, be creative, but I also want to be free from the bondage of it being about hair constantly and always. Like, we're still can't wear certain hairstyles without being discriminated against, you know? So I get misgendered all the time because when I'm out and about, I'm like not really wearing dresses and whatever. I just put on my hoodie and I'm going to Waitrose, whatever. Sorry to be bougie, but I do go to Waitrose.
Slip that one in.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not trying to, it's like, oh my God, I should have said Iceland. and also it's almost like, in order to be able to be seen as worthy of protection and worthy of, can we say femininity? Worthy of, you know, I think protection is the right word. Worthy of being protected as someone who sees themselves as a woman, or someone who, you know, in order to, I guess, live the soft life.
You need to be feminine.
You have to be feminine. You have to, you know, present yourself in a way that is, you know, I want to protect you because you're wearing a dress and you have long hair. And I'm like, in this day and age, in big 2022, I'm not sure about that one. But I feel like I do tend to get kind of sort of dismissed and pushed aside when I have a bald head.
Yeah, I feel
like I feel very different. I'm treated very differently when I'm wearing different hair. And that's an interesting like thing to notice, being a wig wearer who constantly wears different types of wigs, even, and because my wigs are very realistic.
No, they are good.
I tend to get different reactions from different types of people in regards to the texture, whether it's a loose and curly, whether it's giving, you know, straight and sleek. And whether I've got a bald head or whether I've got like a very Afrocentric afro, it's almost like I will be treated completely different and I'm the same person. And it's very like, it's very telling as to how important other people view hair, as opposed to how we internalize the importance of hair, how other people view it as well.
It's like a social experiment.
It is a little bit. I find it very interesting, the types of catcalls and the types of men who approach me when I'm wearing different hair. And it's very like today it'll be all very much like, hey sister.
Not the hey sister.
I'm like, hello uncle. We're not age mates, stop.
I did want to ask what I wanted to talk about, because like I'd said to you before, I know that there's a misconception of alopecia, meaning one type of hair loss.
Yeah.
But it's just an umbrella term of hair loss, and there are different types of alopecia.
Yeah, I think I didn't realise how much people didn't understand about what alopecia as a whole was until the incident with the Oscars and Jada and Will and everything that went down with the slap. The thing that really became very obvious is that people didn't understand what alopecia was.
Mm.
Like, it's just an umbrella term for hair loss. It's just the medical term for hair loss. It doesn't mean completely bald with no eyebrows. Even if you are going through chemotherapy and you lose your hair, it's alopecia. You have alopecia. It doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter where. It's alopecia. If you have, you know, there's people who have trick where they pull their hairs out. Like, I know someone who pulls the hairs from there, and it's alopecia, babes. That's what it is. So, like, I think it's a nervous thing, but yeah. It was one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had.
I was going to say, wait, we're going to skip over that one. How did you get there?
Yeah, I know. People are very open with me. And their hair loss ways. So yeah, I think there's so many different types. Like, I have a condition called CCCA, which is very prominent with Black women. It's a form of alopecia that starts in the center. It can look a lot like male pattern baldness, or female pattern baldness, both the similar things. But it spreads gradually. It's very gradual and it's permanent. So as much as you can slow it down with certain care and certain products, it will gradually get wider and wider until there's a noticeable bald spot.
Right.
And that's what I have. So over the years, because of all my misdiagnoses, it became worse and worse. And now there's so much sparseness that it's not going to grow back. The hair follicles are dead. So the hair is gone. And I think, again, people like don't really understand the concept of the different types of alopecia, and they don't really understand the alopecia that I have.
Mm.
And I didn't understand it either. So when I started talking about it online, and so many other Black women were coming to me saying, I have this, I have exactly the same thing. It's something that is so prominent within the Black community and Black women that they began to think it was hair practices, obviously, because it's always us. So they thought it was due to braiding, they used to call it hot comb alopecia. So where you would, we'd be hot combing our hair, the hot oils would get into our follicles and burn the follicles and then cause the form of hair loss, which is absolutely unfounded and there's no research to say that that is the case.
The audacity.
Very audacious. But the actual research that's been done is showing that it's genetic. And that it is possibly due to West African genetics, where we're trying to protect ourselves from certain diseases that are prevalent in that, you know, area.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, we have sort of because it's a scarring alopecia, so the hair falls out and then it scars over, so that's why it won't grow back.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of scarring of the scalp and of the skin is like quite common when trying to I'm trying to think of the actual the actual science of it, but it's not going to come to me. But it's sort of basically it's our body's way of protecting itself from diseases that are prone to in Africa.
Oh wow, by scarring over.
Yes, by scarring over. So it's a lot to do with fibroids and all those things that are prevalent within the Black community. Yeah, so it's the little bit of research that has been done has already found that.
Mm.
And it's really interesting to me that something that's so prevalent, it has not been researched in such a way. Because I know that if it was happening to another demographic, then we would have research for days and there'll be funds and everything. There'll be a charity.
Mm-hmm.
It would just be like 100% everything. But because it's sort of happening, and I'm not, and alopecia as a whole is that no one really understands it. No one really understands why it happens, especially like alopecia areata and alopecia univalis, where all the hair is gone, no eyebrows, no any hairs, all the hair's gone. Mm. And there's not a lot of research that has been done for it as a whole, but it's almost like, it's very telling. It's just very telling, because it's, I would say maybe one in five Black women have
CCCA,
like without knowing it.
Wow.
And I think that the CCCA sort of triggers a lot of other conditions. Like I have CCCA, I have asthma. I'm just slightly broken.
I love that was listed as a condition.
Yeah, I'm slightly broken. And it's almost like, it's if we could find all these links and if research was actually done correctly, we'd have so many more answers. And even my thing is that even if I don't have the cure, I would like to know the reasons why.
Yeah.
I don't want you to be able to cure my hair loss. I'm at that stage where I don't care. I'm done now. Like I don't even want the hair back. Allow it. But when it's the lack of why.
Right.
I'd like to know why this happened. And funnily enough, I want to know why you don't care why this happened.
Right.
That's the that's the crux of it. That's what I want to actually know. It's like, why don't you care about Black women's health?
Right.
Because they don't.
There's multiple things.
Well, exactly. And this is just one of the things. It's like, I think across the board, especially with alopecia, regardless of race, a lot of women have come back to me and said, you know, as soon as they find out that it's not life-threatening, they sort of like push you out of the door, like push you out of the doctor's office. Like there's no sort of, I never got any offer of like help emotionally or anything like that. So it's almost like you're just left sort of to deal with it. They just say, oh, you know, there's a few charities.
Wow.
And that's about it. But I didn't even get that. I had to Google charities. I didn't even know about Alopecia UK or any of these things. So I find it really interesting that it's the lack of support. Like, I know you can't do anything for me. That's not what I want. That's not what I actually needed at the time either.
Yeah.
Like, I just had a baby and all my hair started falling out.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't mean anything to you, but to me, like, to me.
And it's your job. Like, yeah.
It was, like, heart-wrenching and a horrible situation. And it's not that, and I would say this, prior to my hair loss, I think back in, like, 2011, when I first met my partner, I had a shaved head. Like I was like gonna do like a really low crop, like very reminiscent of yours. And and it was fine. It was just a look because it was a choice.
Right.
When you have alopecia, it's not a choice. It just happens, and you don't know why it happens. And it's almost like that's where you need the support.
Right.
Because. Yeah. It's a very like strange entity because you don't know what's going on. You don't know why. You don't know if you're dying. You don't know if something seriously, seriously is wrong with you. And then when they say, oh, it's just, you know, hair loss, there's nothing we can do about it. A lot of the time I have a friend who started to lose her hair. She's in her 50s. It's just old age. They tell her it's just old age. Go.
Why is it always just?
Yeah, like it's definitely very flippant and very like.
Yeah.
But I find that even with more serious conditions, they're kind of similar reactions we're getting because it's, you know, Black women are probably the least protected women in the world because we know.
Go.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask about, because you were saying a lot of things link, and I know that you spoke about how traction alopecia is, well, there's a lot of shame around it, especially to do with Black women and hair practices.
I think that the most shamed form of hair loss is traction alopecia. And I don't think people realise that a lot of reasons for traction alopecia is people trying to cover up other forms of hair loss. So with things like wigs, high ponytails, because the CCCA starts in the central. And it spreads. So I know that when I first got it, I started to wear my hair in high puffs all the time. So then not only was I losing my hair in the middle, I was losing my hair in the sides.
Right.
I started covering my hair with wigs and not knowing how to really wear wigs at the time. I was just damaging more of my healthy follicles. So it's almost a case of, we don't really know the 100% the reasons why people have traction alopecia. And I think there's a lot of judgment, like, oh, stop braiding your hair, stop doing this, stop doing that. But I don't think people realize that the social and the way that we're portrayed in media and how important it is to look a certain way, especially for younger people as well. Because I know a lot of the damage that I did to my hair, I was doing when I was in my late teens and early 20s, because I was trying to adhere to a certain standard of beauty. And it's like, and as much as I'm loving the bust down weaves, I'm loving the wigs, I'm loving the baby hairs, you girls look so cute. And I'm like, but I know that in 10 years time, you're going to be coming to my page for some advice and tips.
And for some wigs.
Exactly. Because we are just repeating the same patterns that we already did this in the 90s. We mashed up our hair in the 90s.
Yeah.
And we're trying to tell you not to do it and not to wear low-rise jeans, but you continue.
Hey, low-rise jeans. Look, hey. I will not allow for that. I don't
slander,
wear them personally.
Slander.
But they're a look.
They are a look.
And we'll leave it there.
I did wear them. My butt cheeks was hanging out. I didn't have the shape for it.
Also a look. Well, I wanted to ask you one final question.
Yes.
What is one apology that you've made in the past that you would like to take back?
Oh, God, so many.
Where to begin?
Yeah, where to begin? Oh, my gosh. I would say speaking up. Like, I have definitely spoken about my experiences and then felt like I've had to kind of apologize for talking about my own personal experience, especially with my being in foster care. And I spoke about it and I got mercilessly trolled horribly online for talking about my own personal experience and being called ungrateful, and like people in foster care should just be grateful for whatever it is that they got, that like with it. And I didn't apologize, but I stopped talking about it and I diminished myself and I stopped sort of, I was like, oh, like maybe I am ungrateful. And I just think with everything that goes on in the world, it's like, how dare people tell me how I should feel about my own personal lived experience. It's just, and that's across the board when I talk about alopecia, when I talk about any of these things, people are like, oh, but doctors are here to help you, they've got a lot of pressure. And I'm like, yeah, but also this was my experience and this is what happened to me. And I just like hate to really apologize for anything that I've said or done, to
that's
be fair.
So sad though, because even the fact that two of the episodes in this series were about being Black and being in the care system, because it's not talked about enough. So the
not
fact that you had been made to silence your story, that is, it's so sad, because like there needs to be more of it.
There's,
that's the whole
when
point.
The only thing that sort of kept me going, I know it sort of like, everything is a part of my journey. And so when I go from hair loss to adoption and foster care, it's like, it feels strangely far apart, but it's also really connected. I find that when I started talking about that, and again, when I started talking about alopecia, when I started opening my mouth to talk about things, I realized that so many other people have had exactly the same experience. When I was growing up in South London with a white family, I genuinely thought that I was the most unique person in the world. I genuinely thought that it was me and Madonna's children. I genuinely thought that it only happened to rich people. And I was like, why the heck am I here in South London and, you know, I haven't been adopted by a millionaire? What the heck? Only to find out a good 20 years later that private fostering is a thing. Like that many, 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 many Nigerian children were put into a private foster care system. And I would think that my story ended up being quite positive, in regards to I had a lot of identity issues, but physically I was never, nothing ever happened to me in that way, because I've heard some horror stories. And it's almost like the lack of knowledge about the whole system and how it was even allowed to happen was just strange to me because people were just left with strangers for money.
Mm.
And it's like, wow, lots and lots of trauma to unpack from many, many people, myself included. But it's almost like when you keep your mouth shut, you do genuinely think you're the only person in the world. Like when I first started losing my hair, I thought I was the only person this happened to, the only person I knew. I didn't know anyone with alopecia.
Mm.
I didn't know anyone like that. And it was like, when that started happening to me, I was like, oh, so I'll keep silent and I'll hide away. And then when I started talking about it, that's when a whole new community opened up to me. And it's almost like you have to, I guess, sort of put yourself over that hump of being, because I find that I'm a private person, but I'm not, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. I chat a lot and I will spread my business far and wide. But I'm also like, oh no, don't look at me. But, you know, I'm shy. But yeah, I think it's, I've lost my time. I've lost my train of thought, but yeah.
Well, I'm
all of that.
I'm sorry that happened to you, but like, I'm glad that, you know, you've been able to talk a little bit today and just be honest and show your story. I don't want to shrink you.
Thank you.
I want to let you blossom.
I try. My blossom like my dress.
You really are. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything you want to plug?
Nah, we don't do plugs. You know, Nightwig Design. Just FYI.
Well, we'll have your socials linked and all of that jazz. But thank you so much, honestly.
Thank you for having me, my love.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Say It With Your Chest. If you're loving the conversations that we're having, make sure to rate us 5 stars and to leave a review wherever you're watching or listening right now. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe to all things Say It With Your Chest, and make sure you follow Girls Who Are Boys on Instagram and TikTok to know when the next episode will drop. See you next time. Insanity Group.